Faculty Futures Lab is a faculty-led effort to consider the challenges facing institutions of higher education in complex and uncertain times. All guests speak from their own expertise and experience. Produced by the San Diego State University Center for Teaching and Learning. Learn more at ctl.sdsu.edu.
Welcome to Faculty Futures Lab, everybody. I'm DJ Hopkins. I'm a professor at San Diego State University, and I'm joined by Dr. Pam Lack. As usual, hi, Pam.
Hey, DJ.
Season 5 of Faculty Futures Lab. We'll be talking about moving theory into practice in higher education. That means we're talking to people who are blurring the already blurry distinction between theory and practice, academy and profession. And it just so happens that today's guest is also the most recent recipient of our university's Distinguished Teaching Award, Dr. Erlinda Cornelis. Welcome, Erlinda.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Dr. Cornelis is an associate professor of marketing in the Fowler College of Business and a Senate Distinguished Professor here at San Diego State. She also serves as a co-principal investigator for SEEN, a San Diego-based clean tech incubator funded by the California Energy Commission. So glad you could join us today, Erlinda.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
I think so, too. Erlinda, look, let's get right down to it. I've heard you speak about sustainability. What, does that seem too serious?
Sorry.
This is a very serious podcast.
Serious issues.
I've seen you speak about sustainability. I'm familiar with your background as a materialist cultural critic. So, as near as I can tell, at our university, you are basically the College of Business's resident Marxist. Tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, I think it's pretty spot on, actually. And maybe every business school needs a Marxist. Maybe I should put myself up for hire, like a little sign, like rent me as your resident Marxist for business schools internationally.
That would look good on a business card.
That would look great, yeah. No, but for real, many people don't realize how interconnected everything is. And as academics, we're so trained in a specific field. We develop this narrow focus, but the world isn't naturally siloed. So in business, there is a growing awareness of the externalities of capitalism and shareholder primacy. But traditional business curriculum still doesn't consider those externalities. So, yeah, I feel it's my duty at least to discuss some checks and balances on capitalism.
No, I love that. Can you explain to me, who doesn't use the word externalities, what do you mean by externalities in this context?
So externalities are basically the negative impact of business operations on planet and the people. So give me I'll give you a couple of simple examples. For example, in a social way, if a company systematically underpays their workers below living wages and society picks up the slack, basically funds social programs with tax dollars to basically think of food stamps and so on to compensate for that exploitation, that's a social way of discussing externalities. And then environmentally is like greenhouse gas emissions that companies do not account for in their balance sheet, but they use the air as some kind of free landfill to dump greenhouse gas emissions.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
And society picks up the slack in terms of health effects and so on.
So you kind of knocked me sideways here because I didn't expect you to say that I was right. So how did this
But you're always right.
You barely know me, but I'm glad you've picked up on that. I guess my question is, how did this happen? How did you get here? And I don't mean just like, how did you end up in the business school, but how did you end up in the United States?
Yeah.
In the first place.
Yeah. I'm still wondering. No, but I did not study business. I studied political and social sciences. And on top of that, I'm from Belgium, which historically has always been a more progressive socialist country. So I basically came into the business school as a Trojan horse.
Well, what was the position they were advertising for?
Oh, full-on marketing position, yeah. I started teaching marketing research, and they knew all this when they hired me. So I think they willingly brought on a social scientist from Europe.
Oh, so it's like a semi-transparent Trojan horse. Like, they could see what was happening here.
I don't think they knew how bad it was.
Right. Just how many Greeks were hidden
exactly
inside.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but after completing my PhD in Europe, I figured it was kind of now or never in terms of getting out and exploring. So I got selected for a grant from the Belgian American Educational Foundation to do 1 year of postdoctoral research in the United States. And I could pick anywhere. And of course, I'm like, let's have a good time. Let's go to San Diego. But in that year, I was hired and I never left. So I still wonder if the reason why I never left is because I love it here so much or because I have some kind of savior complex and I think there's just so much work to do in terms of sustainability here. Maybe it's both, but yeah. In Dutch, we say, I fell with my butt in the butter.
How do you say that?
Ik ben met mijn gat in de boter gevallen. Yeah, that's a Dutch expression, and it basically means you got so lucky falling with your butt in the butter.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so no, very happy and grateful to be here.
Oh, that's fantastic. When I think of faculty in business programs, I usually imagine people who are moving fluidly between teaching on campus and professional activity off campus. And the people I know in the B School are doing that kind of back and forth movement between the academy and the classroom and their professional life off campus. What does that look like for you? Are you doing that same kind of back and forth between campus work, classroom teaching, and off campus professional activity?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think academia should be of service to society, and most academics are very good at that. I'm in no way unique or special in that regard. Yeah. But for me personally, my work as a professor really consists of teaching, research, advising, mentorship, off-campus public speaking engagements, consulting, and so on. So it's a very versatile job. Common thread is always sustainability, though. So I wouldn't do anything if it's not about sustainability. I can't motivate myself to do any other type of consulting besides sustainable consulting.
Right.
And yeah, I just actually just got back from the 1% for the Planet Global Summit, which was really cool. Yeah. You hang out with a lot of certified B corporations, sustainable business professionals, and it's kind of refreshing to hang out with them and keep tabs of what's happening outside of our ivory tower.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And because I've seen you speak before, I know that your commitment to sustainability is something that it's part of the way you live. You've shared in one of the lectures that I saw that you try to live a small carbon footprint life. Am I getting that right? Am I being too reductive?
No, I mean, yeah, I am painfully aware of the contradictions and hypocrisy in everyone's life that's just inherent to human life. But I do live the way I live because I cannot unknow what I happen to know. And the older I get, I am like, the more I care about the well-being of people and the planet, and that's real. Like, that kind of compassion is pretty strong, and I can't unsee the connections in this world. So there's always a bit of a balance between individual agency and large institutional changes. We can talk more about that if you're interested, but I think part of what we can do as humans is take some of that agency and accountability and start making small changes in our life that can have, on an aggregated level, a really big impact.
I wanted to jump in at this point to ask you about this, because when we were planning for this episode, we were talking a lot about individual agency and choice in a world that is structurally unjust. And I was curious to hear a little bit more about how you not just live that, but teach that, right? Like, we have individual responsibility to ourselves, each other, and the planet. But that alone, in the absence of structural and systemic change, can be, I don't know, frustrating a little bit, that my personal choices matter, but they only matter so much. And so I'm curious how you balance that, but also how you teach that.
Yeah,
Yeah, it is a tricky balance, because you never want to, like, point fingers at people as if they're just not doing enough, while at the same time, I mean, just the other day I saw the $300 million yacht of Mark Zuckerberg parked in the harbor of San Diego, and it's obscene, while there's literally people homeless. So it feels very finger-pointy if you tell people, oh, you should recycle and do all the things on an individual level. But at the same time, I mean, all this discussion about whether consumers should take the lead or businesses should make the change or government should, or the change should come from government, I feel like at this point we simply can't cherry-pick anymore. We don't have the luxury of time to debate about that, and we just need an all-of-the-above approach. So for me personally, I try to do a bit of everything, and again, like I said earlier, I'm not Mother Teresa. I'm aware of the contradictions in everyone's daily life, but that imperfection shouldn't be a reason or an excuse for inertia.
I feel like blaming the consumer has been part of the rhetoric of corporate greenwashing for years, holding individuals responsible, for example, for recycling, which is now leading to lawsuits.
Exactly.
But on the flip side, making it about personal responsibility, and here I'm thinking about COVID. So in COVID, it was all about like, we're all in this together. It's up to you. Instead of let's build a society that is safe. Let's put air filters in every public space, in every school, in every building, so that you can safely live your life and the economy can keep running. And so it all became about individual choice, to the point where in the New York City subway, eventually it got to like, here are the masking options. Mask. Do this, do that. You do you with no mask, right? Like it's, it can't just be about individual responsibility.
Yes. The spectrum of acceptable individual responsibility can't begin with very responsible, but include completely irresponsible. That's not really a spectrum of responsibility.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But as much as individual changes can be hard, it can also be very uplifting. It can feel, it can empower people. So when it comes to teaching, when I start the semester teaching sustainability to a bunch of business students who initially, I mean, they may feel like, oh, I want to make some changes. I feel like I want to contribute positively to this world, but they have no idea how to even go about it. When I first explain things, you see them literally like sink into despair, their eyes open, and then it's about giving them tools and agency and empower them to climb out of that and to actually do hands-on, do things that work for them. Doesn't mean everyone has to go vegan from one day to the next or stop driving all cars all whatsoever. I mean, of course, it would be great for the planet, but economically, I mean, we do have to make some trade-offs. But if everyone does their part, it can feel very uplifting to know that you can do something.
So my question is, what exactly are you teaching? Because I know you're here. The Trojan horse was professor of marketing. You're talking about sharing the externalities that impact the environment, that impact society in undesirable ways. What is the context for delivering that content to your students? What are you teaching? What's the name of the class?
Yeah. The name of the class is currently Sustainable Marketing, but it will turn into a capstone program eventually, Sustainable Marketing Strategy. So what we do is we, first of all, look at the most pressing current issues. So wealth inequality, we have a whole module about that because that's at the root of a lot of societal issues. We look at social injustices, environmental crisis, overconsumption, and the role of marketing in that. And the reason why we talk about these issues first is because I don't think you can solve any problems if you don't look them in the eye, if you don't actually like face them, understand them so you can tackle them. And then we shift gears. We start talking about solutions, consumer-driven solutions, business-driven solutions, governmental solutions, different business entities that can deviate from a traditional shareholder primacy business model that is so dominant, has been for decades. So discussing different ways of solving these issues through business.
And your students are responsive.
Oh, absolutely. They love it. Yeah. It's eye-opening. I feel like I said, some students come in having some idea of wanting to do good in the world. Some pick the class because it fits their schedule. And they, they end up really turning around.
I love that. When I saw you receive your Senate Distinguished Teaching Award, you gave this wonderful lecture that in many ways summarized your research program for a general interdisciplinary audience. And afterwards, I noticed that there were about half a dozen of your colleagues from the College of Business, which I thought was fantastic. And one of them asked, in a very genuine way, what would it be like if your curriculum were required? And my first thought was, oh, I just learned something. Erlinda's curriculum is not required.
Not yet, no.
Not yet. But everybody from your college was like, looking at each other, nodding.
Yeah.
What would it be like if our B school or every B school required these kinds of perspectives?
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, nothing in the world is siloed. So I think students, if we want to transform the business world, we have to start with business education. So if you want to raise the next generation of business leaders to consider more than shareholders and really have a stakeholder model in mind when they lead businesses, then we have to bring in these perspectives. We have to go more holistic than just traditional business curriculum and trickle-down economics. So what would the world look like? I think it would take a while for those effects to trickle down, but you see immediately in the students that are graduating
the
that they can transform.
Sustainability effects.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, right. Yeah. But students join or recent graduates joining organizations would have an immediate different outlook.
So tell me about teaching.
Okay. I love teaching.
Yeah, I've seen you teach. And I've also seen you pretend to teach because we had a photo opportunity and we sharked together some students and we sat them down in our campus's most beautiful lecture hall.
And subjected them to some,
Well, I don't know if you thought you were pretending to teach, but I think those students thought you were actually teaching. I think they may have even learned something.
Yeah.
So, well, just speaking as a theater professor, well done. That was very convincing.
Thank you. It was genuine. Yeah, it was actually legit.
So how did you come to teaching? What motivates your teaching? Because you're clearly one of these people who could be consulting all the time. You don't really need this.
Yeah, I love teaching. I actually come from a family of teachers as well.
Oh, that's great.
I don't think I ever mentioned that. Yeah, I think the power of education is huge. I mean, especially in the case of universities, you have a captive audience of 20-something-year-olds who are very, very capable of understanding the complexities of the world and are at this pivotal time in their life where they're about to, like, set certain goals, start their careers in many cases. And I think that's a great time to open their minds as much as possible. And that doesn't mean giving them just my perspective. That means showing them data, showing them facts that allows them to consider more than what they've maybe initially thought and just really opening their eyes and consider different perspectives. I think, yeah, education is really powerful.
That goes back to change and how, you know, we can't change the world overnight, but by shaping the next generation of business leaders, both in our community and hopefully beyond, right, like we will start to see this ripple effect of change very quickly, I think, as you transform the way that they think about the role of business in sustainability, in positive transformation, and in things like that. I'm not quite sure how to finish that sentence just to say, like, that's rad.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, but the thing is, it's a lot of work. I think a lot of faculty, to your earlier point, DJ, a lot of faculty in the business school knows we're heading in that direction. There's a growing awareness of these externalities of business, but changing curriculum is hard. Faculty are trained in a certain way, have developed curriculum for decades in a certain way. Changing that all around can be intimidating, can be hard. They may feel like they lack the expertise to really bring in interdisciplinary perspectives. I bring in guest speakers. I don't know it all. Like, I bring in expertise from the outside, and I think we can learn from each other. But the thing is also, it's sometimes an uphill battle because up until recently, most business schools have allowed just enough deviation from the norm to signal that they care about sustainability, but not actually enough disruption to change the status quo, because no one's really incentivized to topple a system that they're comfortable with or that they benefit from. So in that sense, there's a lot of, maintenance of the status quo.
Right. You wouldn't want to be known as the anti-business business school.
No.
But also, what you're talking about is not necessarily toppling the system. Or are we talking about, are we anti-capitalist here?
Uh-oh.
Sorry to put you on the spot. So what are the schools that are... Well, I guess I should ask, are there schools that are doing the sort of thing that we're talking about that have intrinsically adopted as requirements the kind of sustainability principles that you teach as electives?
Oh, yeah, increasingly. Yeah, just one example is Cambridge School of Business in UK, Judge School of Business at Cambridge University. They recently got B Corp status, certified B Corp status, which is a real strong indicator of their commitment to sustainability.
Right.
So that's a huge one. But the thing is, business schools have to be transformed. Doesn't mean we have to completely eradicate everything we know about business. Again, like, we don't have to swing the pendulum all the way to the other side. We just have to transform capitalism in a way that works for more people. Stakeholder capitalism instead of shareholder primacy. Conscious capitalism. Alternatives to capitalism. Think of benefit corporations, which are organizations. It's a legal statute for organizations to consider more than just shareholder value maximization. So by allowing different entities, different business entities, different alternatives to capitalism to seep into business curriculum, students will realize, hey, there's more ways of being successful while at the same time being good to our planet, people, and so on. You don't have to exploit people and have a polluting supply chain just to make it. And the corporate greed has just gone way out of control, in especially this country, but globally. That should be reined in.
That was going to be my follow-up.
I can mind read.
Yeah. Does it feel like the United States is a more extreme example of the kind of capitalism that you see in Europe?
Yes, unfortunately, yeah, because there's less governmental regulation here. Mm-hmm. And because in this country, governments can take money from super PACs. Mm-hmm. Citizens United over here makes it so that companies can have, actually have a really, really big impact on our political system. So it no longer really becomes, it sounds very bleak, but it kind of is, honestly. That's one of the main changes. So again, that's why I keep coming back to everything's interconnected. We cannot discuss in a business school the role of business without bringing in the role of governance, the role of the government, the role of people, and voting, and how everything is connected.
Clearly, good governance is not always a priority in the United States.
Mm-hmm. No comment.
But let's get out the vote in
19 days. I have many thoughts
days.
And feelings, but yeah.
My ballot has already been received.
That is excellent.
I haven't even opened my ballot yet. I have to spend a whole weekend researching and doing all the work to prepare to vote.
Oh, well, I could fill you in. There's a presidential election in 19
no
days.
Shit. Well,
it's
that part
true.
I know.
Oh, you've heard of that?
It's all the ballot measures.
Oh, yeah.
The participatory democracy that California has notched up to 11.
Yeah, that's entirely true.
Excellent.
So, Erlinda, you've talked about the urgency of teaching sustainability to business students. And I guess the question is, once you've done that, do you see that it's possible for business to find solutions to the problems that it has in many ways created?
Mm-hmm. I think it's certainly possible. And don't get me wrong, I mean, corporations are not the enemy per se. It's just the model of privatizing profit and socializing costs that is simply unsustainable for people in our planet. So, I mean, as we grow our awareness of this very strong reality, we just need to be honest as business people and recognize that new circumstances require new responses. And the good thing is, I mean, I'm hopeful because the business world is so innovative, right? They pride themselves in being clever and coming up with solutions to a variety of different problems. I mean, think of self-driving cars, but like, okay, cool. Like now we have self-driving cars. Yeah. But was that really a solution or just a clever innovation? Like, did we ever think like, oh man, if only we had self-driving cars, what a burden to drive. So maybe, sure, there's some clever solutions to things, but are they really solving a problem? And at the same time, sometimes it feels like we're tiptoeing around the real issues that need solving. We're coming up with all this clever stuff, but like at the same time, we're not tackling the biggest problem of our lifetime, which is the climate crisis, social justice issues, wealth inequality, and so on. So I challenge business and by consequence, business education to put the emphasis there and to really start looking at solutions for those issues. That'd be the ultimate creativity.
Yeah. I guess it comes down to innovation for innovation's sake, which might be the current model, versus innovation for the sake of the planet and sustainability and social justice. And sort of reframing innovation to really ask the questions of just because we can, should we? And if we do this, what are the unintended consequences? And maybe we should hit pause and not do the thing.
Yeah. It's hard to rein in human creativity when they're curious about it. I mean, as a species, we just, we're driven by, success, innovation, growth, and so on. But maybe growth at the expense of people in our planet is just not sustainable. I mean, could go on and on, GDP growth.
Well, the challenge, it seems, is for someone in your position to flip the script from innovation for the sake of selfishness, greed, to innovation for the sake of a common good, altruism.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole field in social entrepreneurship, and it's growing, and we see so much more of that. So that is very, very hopeful. You see the business world. I mean, conference after conference you see now in our field is on social impact. And that's really, really good. I'm still carefully optimistic because I do see a lot of that kind of greenwashing intent. And like I said earlier, putting a little bit of a sustainability sauce over the same practices, not actually tackling the root causes of issues. But it's a good trend. There's a growing awareness.
That seems like some cause for hope.
Absolutely.
Erlinda, this has been a really good conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on Faculty Futures Lab.
You're welcome. My pleasure.